Look up there in the sky. It's a bird, a plane. It's Handsome Boys Comics Hour.
Those boys are so handsome.
One writer.
One artist.
One weekly discussion of comics and nerd culture. I'm your host, Robert Dorman, literature geek and writer.
And I'm your other host, Eric Z. Goodnight, professional artist and illustration nerd. I don't know why we're doing this.
We are the Handsome Voice Comics Hour, your home for news, reviews, slightly antagonistic banter, and much, much more.
If it feels right, do it, I guess.
You know, you got to spice it up once. The variety is the spice of life, Eric. So,
that's
you know.
True. You show me Ant-Man and I go crazy.
That's all it takes. Ant-Man was dancing to our theme song.
He was doing the ant dance.
Is that a thing?
I mean, if you get ants in your pants, you're going to dance.
Wow. It's very poetic.
I know.
So, Handsomeites.
I'm a poet and I didn't even realize.
Handsomeites, how are you guys doing out there? We're back once again. We just don't know what's good for us. We just keep coming back to this.
Yep.
We just keep reading.
Against all odds.
Keep reading comics that have snail
and
people
acting
in them.
Dumb.
Snail people.
Yep. Snail people.
Jesus.
You got it. Yes, you have snail people to look forward to.
We are reading Uzumaki by Junji Ito. I'm going to do a blanket apology for all my terrible Japanese pronunciations when we get
it's
there.
It's fine. I took 4 semesters of Japanese. I will correct you, and then actual Japanese people can make fun of my pronunciations because I'm quote unquote educated.
Educated.
they can be like, no, don't say it that way.
Don't say it that way. But that's coming up later. We do have weekly floppies. Before we get to that, though, we have a question from a listener, Eric.
Oh, goodness.
Watershed. This is a very simple question from Izzy. His question, Cyclops I-beam or Superman's heat vision, and why? Now, I have feelings about this, because frankly, I think that they're too different. There is a cartoon that has floated around the internet for a long time. I think you may have linked it to me at one point.
I sent it to you, and your response was, Cyclops doesn't work like that.
And that's...
As a statement. No, like, just as a period. You said nothing else. I was like, wow, you're a dick.
Well, I had seen it on Reddit before, and there were a bunch of, the cartoon is Cyclops, like, using his vision as, like, a little laser for a cat to play with, and then he ends up cutting the cat in half, and that's the punchline. One, I don't condone cat violence. Two, his eye beam is not like Superman's heat vision. It is like a punch. It is literally his eyes are punching you. I think in a continuity on, I think actually his eyes are a portal to a different dimension.
That's pretty neat.
And what is coming out is like just pure force, red force beams. And then I prefer Cyclops IP because it's more interesting than just like here, laser eyes. But you know, frankly, if I'm going to be a comics nerd, I'm going to be a comics nerd and point out that Cyclops does not have laser beams.
He didn't say laser beam though. He said
I-beam. I know, that's why I say I-beam.
He does have I-beam. Geez.
He does have I-beams, but
beam that comes from his eye. I dare you to find the fault in Izzy Steak Fry's logic.
I'm not finding a fault in his logic. I'm merely attacking the general zeitgeist.
You're holding Izzy accountable for something.
No, I am using this as an opportunity.
It's a teaching moment. This is good.
That Cyclops' eye punches, which I'm not saying Izzy misunderstands. So I'm saying that most people misunderstand.
So yeah, I mean, force beam.
Yeah, eye punches.
Mm-hmm.
I like eye punches.
That just is strange, though.
It is.
It makes me want to draw Cyclops with like a big Hulk arm, a big red Hulk arm coming out of his face.
That's actually sounds pretty good. I can go for that.
Mm-hmm. Just remember the takeaway, guys. Cyclops doesn't work like that.
I'm sorry. I am There's just some things I can't be swayed from. Cyclops chopping poor little kitty cats in half is not one of those things.
Can't condone it.
Can't. So with that, sorry, Izzy. Is your question to attack the general populace? You know what time it is, though, right? Right here?
Oh, my God. Could it be time for floppiness?
It's the time. It's the floppiest part of the week. It's time for Weekly Floppy. I faded off like a robot there.
Mm-hmm. You are a robot.
I am?
Mm-hmm.
But wouldn't
now,
I know?
Now your transformation is happening.
Wouldn't I know, though?
No. You never know until it's too late.
It's like that Fallout 3 side quest.
I guess.
You don't remember it?
There was only one side quest in Fallout 3. You think I'd remember it?
It was when you had to go hunt down the AI that was programmed to forget that he was an AI. And if you're a dick, you can tell him that he's a robot and he kills himself. Or submits to slavery, if you're one of the two. But either way, Week Floppy is part of the show where Eric and I will talk about the week's books and tell you to buy or do not buy them. And you should listen to us for the most part. I mean, we're people. We're flawed. Occasionally. Rarely. I mean,
you are.
Oh, okay. Well, I am. I guess
I'm a perfect angelic being.
Angelic?
Mm-hmm.
Our first book, our indie book of the week, is Curb Stomp number 1, written by Ryan Ferrier, illustrated by Devaki Nyogi, colors by Neil Lalonde, letters by Colin Bell. What are your thoughts, Eric? I want to hear them.
I think that heavy sigh says a lot about this book.
I'm right there with you.
This is not a good book. There's really no part of this that I think is good. This is completely nonsensical. I don't know. I don't care for the art. I don't care for the premise. I don't care for the writing. I don't care really for any aspect of this. This is. I don't even know where to begin talking about what's wrong with this book. This feels like a half-assed attempt to try and like, oh, well, I want to do something that's like Lumberjanes, but it's about punkers. And it just is, it's like, it's about punk rock and street violence, and it makes no sense. It's an attempt to try and make Murder on the Street cute. And makes less than no sense. I don't understand this. This is a book about 20-year-old fashion models murdering people in the street, and it makes no fucking sense.
Yeah, it's like a mixture of, like, the Warriors, mm-hmm. plus, like, girl gang exploitation films and all that stuff, but I don't think there's any part of this that is I have not seen done elsewhere and better.
What is a notable example of a girl gang movie? Because this doesn't make sense to me.
Like, well, at its core, it's not really, there's like the suspension of disbelief required is, mm-hmm. I mean, they're exploitation films. They're meant to be just like,
okay. So there's not extraordinary violence or
nudity. It's not really any kind of plot
it's like a
or
women's
premise.
It's like a wizard prison movie, you know, where all those naked, writhing wizards.
Gandalf there. Dumbledore.
Yeah. Yes. Well, some hot Gandalf on Dumbledore action.
But no, it's like a mixture. Like, it has the kind of that vibe from the Warriors where, you know, they're like themed gangs and stuff and they take control of different parts of the city. And then there's like dystopia stuff in here, which I don't really understand. It's just, you know, and it's kind of trite and boring and not original.
Here,
look at all these characters. You don't learn anything. They're like, here's a stereotype. Here's a stereotype. Here's a stereotype.
Exactly.
Like,
there's nothing introduced about any of them. We have no character revealed about any of them. It's just, here's a character design. Now you're supposed to like this character because it's a story I'm telling you.
Yeah. I don't know. The art.
It's the thing about it that bothers me. Like, I think that if this person, this is less like a comic book art and more like fashion illustration. These characters look like they're posing and not moving. Like, this whole first page where this guy's brandishing a knife, and then he gets she asks him to smell this bat instead of hitting him with a bat. Can you see that panel? It's like on the second or third page.
Yeah,
does not look like he's getting hit with that. He's like, oh, let me rub my cheek on this bat very slowly.
This is
stiff and rigid, and this doesn't work.
What page was it? I just saw this. Go to page 17 and look at the second panel. Those two women have the exact same face.
Yes, it's true. And they're already hard enough to tell apart. They're two women with the exact same complexion, face, colored hair. The only difference is one has asymmetrical hair that looks like feathers.
Yeah, very underwhelmed. Do not buy.
Don't even look at this book. It's got a really nice, cover art, but beyond that, it's not good.
Yeah, Tula Lute does a great cover, but you can find whole books with her art inside of them.
Most of the characters on this cover don't represent the characters in this book.
No, they don't.
It doesn't even look similar.
Mm-mm. So, curb stop number one, double do not buy. Wah, yeah. Wah.
Under no circumstances.
Next book of the week is our first book from Marvel. It is Spider-Gwen, number one. It's gotten its own series. And I think let me see. Written by Jason Latour, one of the Jasons. Art by Robbie Rodriguez. Rico Renzi doing colors. Vic Clayton Cowles doing letters. This is a Spider-Gwen book. Gwen Stacy is Spider-Man, alternate universe.
I do have to be honest. It's not a really good way to protect your secret identity to call yourself, like, Spider-Gwen. It's not really smart.
She is Spider-Woman. They just used that as the title.
That's a joke!
Ah!
Did it sneak up and bite you?
It did.
Okay.
But I liked it. It was fun. It's a quick moving...
I really like this alternate Earth where every tough male, in the Marvel Universe is part of the New York Police Force.
Frank Castle is a cop.
And Ben Grimm.
Yes,
I love that. That's so good. I like Castle and Grimm. Cops. That's great. Ben's the good cop. Sometimes the bad cop. And Frank's the really bad cop.
Yeah, he's... Frank Castle is basically just the Punisher, but a cop. Yes, but we have, Gwen Stacy is Spider-Woman. She's... recently been kicked out of her band, a band named the Mary Janes, with Mary Jane as the lead singer.
Mm-hmm.
Her father is he is still a cop. They did not alter that. But now she's fighting the Vulture. Death from a butt. You get some graffiti for.
It's a pretty sick burn, apparently.
It is. I really like it. The art is. I really, really enjoy the art. The costume, we talked about it before, the costume design is really great and fun.
Everybody's in love with the Spider-Gwen costume. That's not going to change anytime soon.
No, it's not. And but I don't know. I'm a buy. It's great. It's fun. I think most people are checking this out anyway, but it's a fun alternate Spidey kind of story where we don't have to... Mm-hmm. There's no Peter Parker, so...
He is dead. D-E-D.
like you spell it.
Mm-hmm.
I do, but I also commendable is that Marvel, this is like Marvel just went, a lot of people like this character. Let's just make a book about her.
It's good that they can move quick enough on something like that. This is it's a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like that they're responding to the whole, hey, let's put more women in titles, and they're not making Curb Stomp.
Yes, get Spider-Gwen, not Curb Stomp.
Yeah, I'll take Silk and Spider-Gwen over Curb Stomp. That's, yes.
Yes, fun superhero adventures with female lead characters.
Are there any other stories set in the Spider-Gwen universe?
I don't think so. Not in, right, I mean, Spider-Verse, it's like the event had, I think, some of the books related to it, because there was the whole actual, because Amazing Spider-Man had the actual main stories, but Spider-Verse, the book, had a lot of, like, crossover stories with all these different Spider-Men.
I think I'm going to coin something.
Uh-oh.
This makes me think it's like the 1602 verse, you know?
Mm-hmm.
This is the Marvel hipster verse.
Probably. I'm trying to think if there's any more hipster alternate universe I can think of off the top of my head.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there is. I don't think Kieran Gillen has gotten to any of the alternate universes yet, so...
No, his alternate universe is everyone in mod dresses. The whole world is a 60s girl close harmony group.
So, are you, you're bi, Eric?
This is the book of the week. I mean, anyone can tell you that. Jason Latour was at a signing. He was just like mobbed with people. He was at Heroes Aren't Hard to Find in Charlotte, one of the best comic book stores in North Carolina. If you ever made it up to my home state, I would definitely take you there. But he was there. It's the store that's local to him. And that there was a huge signing event. And he was just a mob with people. He was so happy. Everyone's really liking this book.
Yeah, it's very solid. I'm imagining that it will continue through Battle World, and then suddenly Spider-Gwen will be in the normal Marvel universe or whatever happens afterwards.
I hope not, because I just sort of like this universe.
Yeah, I don't know if they're going to be able to sustain that.
I mean, who knows?
Who knows what the plan is after? We'll find out. We will find. I imagine that's basically any book that's doing well. They're just like, okay, they live. So double buy, Spider-Gwen number one. Next up, S.H.I.E.L.D. number three, or capital S-H-I-E-L-D number three.
Yeah, as you have to type in on the Comixology search.
You do, exactly.
Because I typed in S.H.I.E.L.D. and it's like, here's this thing from the 60s that you're not looking for. Is this helpful?
Does a little paperclip pop up?
And ask, no, I killed that guy back in 1998.
You killed him?
Yeah, I killed Clippy.
You killed that version of Clippy, because he just keeps popping up other places.
He just keeps popping up.
This is, let's see, written by Mark Waid, art by Alan Davis, pencils by Alan Davis, inks by Mark Farmer, Matthew Wilson doing the colors, Joe Maragmana, letterers. This one is seeing Coulson and Spidey team up to go into Doctor Strange's house and figure out what's going on with the help of this, Pavel Rasputin.
Yeah, who's what?
Crazy eyebrow guy.
Yeah.
He's got some shoulders, though, on this. On that dude has some shoulders. He's like a
on
linebacker.
On that dude
or
has
something.
Some shoulders. Yes, sir.
He's like a former linebacker or something.
And current magic man.
Okay. But it's like Spidey and Coulson going in there dealing with weird magic stuff. We've been pretty positive on the first two issues of this, and I'm right there with this one. This one I enjoyed a lot. I wish Doctor Strange was actually in it, but other than that, I enjoyed it.
It is. I think this is weaker than the other Shields. I think mostly on the art, which doesn't feel quite of this era.
Yeah,
it feels a little dated. Not bad, but I mean, not even like 90s. It feels like. Like 2002, and it's weird that that has its own like look to me now.
Well,
it is a good, fun book, but I think you could skip it more than the last ones. It does have some nice classic Spidey action in it.
Yeah, I do like Wade writing Spidey. He always does.
Oh yeah, he definitely does.
He has a good handle on Spidey. I mean, Alan Davis has been drawing for 30 years now, so you're not wrong in saying that his style is of a different era to a certain extent. I kind of actually felt that I don't think it's a negative. It just feels different to me.
Yeah, and it's not what I want in this book. I mean, it's not terrible. He does a good, adequate job, but something about it's making this sort of not work for me.
I think,
but it's far from terrible.
No, it's competent.
If anything, it raises my mush meter.
I think I like it just because it makes Spidey look a lot like I remember reading him growing up.
It's a very classic Spider-Man.
It doesn't look like Humberto Ramos's Spider-Man, where his like legs bend in opposite directions and his. What, so I don't know. It made me think about that. I think that's where I'm just like, oh, I don't care because Spider-Man looks like I remember him. But these are very encapsulated stories, and they're kind of even meant in that way, in that you don't nearly need to read any given one in order to kind of get a hold of anything. But I'm a buy on this. I like it.
Yeah, I'm a buy. Probably mush meter of one.
Hmm, okay.
Light so mushiness.
We're on the half, we're .5 mushy on mm-hmm. shield number three. That's a double buy, .5 mush meter. Mm-hmm. I'm glad we've instituted the mush meter. I'm very happy in that decision.
You're pro mush meter.
I'm pro mush meter.
Mm-hmm.
mm-hmm.
I just can't not make you laugh. It's
sometimes your mannerisms just.
I can't help. I'm just naturally hilarious.
I think so. So moving on to DC, our first DC book is Gotham Academy number 5, written by Becky Cloonan and Brendan Fletcher, art by Carl Kershaw, colors by M. Sassy K. and Serge LaPointe, letters by Steve Wands.
Did you know that Cloonan is a metalhead?
Yes. Well, I follow her on Twitter.
Yeah. Well, she tweeted about that show that I tried to get you to go to with me.
Which one? The Behemoth show?
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
We talked about Behemoth. It's in the public record now.
Oh, good. it's in the archive.
It is.
I'd be remiss if I didn't ever. I feel like we should talk. I want to say I like this book every time because
It sucks because you want to have a discussion, but almost all the time, without just completely ruining the book and just describing everything that happens. Which, hey, that's good fun too. save your $4 and don't support this good book. We'll just tell you everything. They're consistently good.
Yeah.
And everyone should read this book. Everyone with a soul. I don't know about, like, heartless, evil people. Those people probably should not read this.
Yeah. It really stood out to me. I don't know if you tell me if it stood out to you more this time than in others. It just seems like this, like, is even, like, this issue in itself felt more like an animated movie. Maybe it's just the heavy shadows a lot of the time mm-hmm. in the coloring, but it mm-hmm. felt more.
Well, I think they're doing more to push the backgrounds
mm-hmm.
To make them feel more painted and rendered and to make the characters feel flatter and more animated.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a conscious design decision. And I mean, I've compared it to Disney's The Rescuers.
Right. That's
probably every single time we've talked about this book. And I still think it has, it's like kind of anime The Rescuers. This issue is also more Hogwartsy than all the previous ones put together.
Mm-hmm.
And you get a good amount of witch.
And croc, I was going to say. You get a lot of,
oh yeah,
of scared croc. It's like, I don't want to go back. I don't want to go back to Arkham. What does croc sound like?
And then I threw a rock at him.
There you go.
Yeah.
We need to institute a croc segment.
Is that what we need to do?
We need a croc segment. Killer croc. Killer croc who is timid. mm-hmm. But it's beautiful week in, week out. The story's really, it's really ramping up. We now have a bat boy, which is always good. And then,
A man bat heartthrob, no less.
I know. I'm a buy. If that isn't clear.
Yeah. Yes.
Yes, guys, support this book, please. Go buy it. Double buy. Gotham Academy number 5.
You can watch Killer Croc eat a whole cow leg.
Our last book of the week. Oh, good. Bye, Comixology.
You don't really need it.
Yes, I do. I want to look at it.
No.
I need to read the credits.
No.
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 It's just Curb Stomp again. It's okay.
It's better than Curb Stomp. I'll give it that.
It is. It is not as bad as Curb Stomp.
We're already giving a review before I even read anything. Suiciders, number 1, written and drawn by Lee Bermejo, Matt Hollingsworth doing colors, J.K. Fletcher doing letters. It is a alternate dystopian future where California has broken off from the rest of the country and Los Angeles is the entire state. New Angeles, right? Is that what it's called? Or San Angeles? I forget what they call it.
San Angeles is definitely from... That's from Demolition Man.
Oh. Well, there's certainly a lot of Demolition Man in this.
Where's the three seashells in this comic book? I know. That's what I'm curious about.
But there's a Suiciders is, there's a death sport. We've done a lot of death sport stuff lately. But this, after it has split apart, like, it is actually very successful, affluent area, and people want in. So there's also, like, a part of the story where it's showing, like, you know, people trying to run the border, basically sneak in, and they get caught. But then the main character is this guy named the Saint, who is apparently an angel. He actually is a saint, and et cetera, et cetera.
El Santo.
It's hard for me to, like, just reading the premise. Like, it's been in the DC, back of the DC books for, like, a month now. Like, you need to read this. I was like, okay. Like, it's hard for me to see past all the tropes on display of, like, hey, dystopia with death sport and, ultraviolence and neon lights and...
I think it's kind of apt that we're talking about Demolition Man, because I think you're supposed to appreciate this on a Demolition Man level.
Okay.
I don't think you're supposed to really look at this as great literature. This is a beautiful book where people in armor kill each other, and, like, there's a blinking neon sign that says kill.
That's true. I completely see that, but then at the same time, like, you get these poor people, like, who are missing fingers trying to sneak into this country, and they're shot on sight, like, murdered mercilessly. And it's like, well, that's a little bit, is that supposed to be funny too? Is that supposed to be so over? It's not.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's like, why do we need social commentary, you're saying? Or not even social commentary, because I don't even know what you're... I don't understand the point of it. I don't know.
It is very beautiful. Lieber Mayhoe's art is gorgeous. It's very moody and atmospheric, and I think I'm a buy, but mushy buy, maybe three.
Yes.
Are you there with me, Eric?
I think, what number did you say?
I gave it a three.
I think that's a pretty fair cop. I will back you up on that.
Okay. Because I'll probably check out, we can check out an issue or two more of this and see which end it ends up on. He says he has 18 issues of this in the can. Like, not done, but in his head. Like, he has an outline for three arcs already. So, it's planned. I've read an interview. I think it's outlined and ready. Like, he's not just making it up on the spot. The Saint of Suicides. So that's a double buy, but mushy three. Mush meter 3.0. So, do you read anything else, Eric?
Not really, no. Not this week.
I read Rasputin.
How was that?
It's good. It's the same. I mean, I like it. I'm saying the same in meaning that's consistent tone. I like it. It ended in a strange way, but I'm still curious to see where it goes from there.
How Russian was it? How does it fare on the Russian meter?
It was in war. This pretty issue is contending with, like, they're in World War One, like, in the trenches and stuff. So a little Russian. Not much. Not a lot of Russian. Not nearly as Russian as some of the previous episodes. Issues.
Fair enough.
Episodes talk like it's a TV show. That's all I read for books this week. So with that, Floppy's part of the week is over. Until next week. There's always more. There's always more flop coming out. Right, Eric?
Yep. You can always flop it.
Always flop it. You can flop it whenever you want. We're not going to put constraints on that. But with that, it is time for checking in. Don't get tired of that noise.
Why would you?
Checking in is the part of the show where Eric and I will talk about what we've been up to during the week. Nerdy things, generally, recommendations, or even anti-recommendations on rare occasions. Eric, your space in the show notes is just blank. So it's a mystery.
I never fill it in.
I know you don't. What have you been doing?
Is it my assignment? I need to start doing that.
That's your homework from now on.
Am I going to get an F on? Am I going to get an F
on the report card? You're going to get notes too. Fills in his show notes. Going to give it to Mama. Good night.
Request conference.
So what have you been doing?
Last night and all day yesterday was the Gasparilla Arts Festival, or Gasparilla Festival of the Arts. And I have to say, it's part of Gasparilla that I really like, because it's been going on since the start of this year. It's like Gasparilla never goddamned ends. It's ridiculous. But there was a huge outdoor art fair yesterday. Tons of artists, really wonderful work. I walked around for hours. I mean, there are people from all over the country. It seemed like there were a lot of Midwestern people coming down trying to escape the brutal winter.
I was about to say.
But of course, like, the weather did not cooperate, and the whole yard that all of these artists had their precious artwork in turned into a swamp. It was the worst possible conditions for an art show.
Jesus.
My Chuck Taylors were brownish gray with mud caked up to above my ankles by the end when I was going home. It was pretty miserable.
Jesus.
But I spent several hours doing that, and then I went to an opening at Cafe Hay, where I had a piece in a show. So it's been a very arty couple of days there, don't you know?
Don't you know? How was Drink and Draw? You didn't get to talk about it.
I not talk about Drink and Draw? Wow.
Not the second one. We recorded the day of.
The day of, that's right. This is the first week after that. Drink and Draw is good, and you know, I'm plugging it every chance I get. Talked to several artists last night at the show and invited them personally to come out and hang out with us. And you know, it's starting to be a success. They actually talked about it in the Creative Loafing, along with the piece that I did. They mentioned that I host the drawing club there at Cafe Hay. So it's fun. It's exciting. I'm really pumped up about it.
Awesome.
I do have a nerdy anti-recommendation.
Speaking
of anti-recommendations.
Uh-oh. What is it?
Updating your Android software on a rooted system. Don't do it, guys. Don't root your system and then upgrade your operating system on your Android device, because then you will no longer have an Android device.
Does it work? Brick it?
It is fucking bricked. I can't even shut it off.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it is. I can reset it and it shows me the Android, like, logo. That's all the device is good for now.
Jesus.
That's why I was using my computer to look at floppies today.
Okay. So, all you people, don't do that.
Yeah, don't root your device and then install a new operating system on it. Although I think you can root it and install, like, a ROM or something, which is probably what I should have done, but I tried to do an official, like, you know, Verizon/Android operating system update, and that does not work right. Everything I'm looking at online says there's no way, like, you can, like, apparently you have to, like, open it up and, like, flash the damn thing. I have no earthly clue, but no one posting about it online seems to have a solution in terms of fixing it. So I don't know. It could just be that all the smart people that are smart enough to fix it aren't dumb enough to ruin their friggin' tablet. So I don't know what camp this puts me into. But fair warning, don't system update your rooted devices.
Good
to
know.
I'm a cautionary tale.
Don't do what Eric does.
Robbie just doesn't even understand the words that I said.
I don't, really.
Although I will say, a big recommendation for pouring coffee all over your 15-year-old keyboard, because it apparently doesn't even know. I think this is also hilarious that I literally poured half of a cup of coffee on my keyboard and it didn't even care. It didn't even give a shit. It's like, whatever. Hey there, Robbie.
Hey.
How about a hug?
Okay. It's gonna be an internet hug, but sure.
Okay. Internet high five
with a hug. You can't
do
it though.
How about you just check in?
Oh, you want me to talk about things I did?
You can.
Okay.
You know, if you want to. It's your time. It's your time. You do whatever you want with it.
Oh, well, I have some things to talk about. I'm gonna go video game first, and then we can have a little discussion afterwards about something else that I think you're gonna be very interested in, I think.
Well, good.
First thing, a video game. It is just recently released, called Hand of Fate on Steam. I think it's also available on your consoles through, if you download through like the arcade or PSN or whatever, you can download it. It was Kickstarter into early access, and now it has gone full release. It is a very interesting game. I've never seen the mixture of its mechanics before, ever. I saw an article on Kotaku about it, and it really sparked my interest. It's a roguelike game to a certain extent. Like most roguelikes now, there's no real true rogue games anymore. It's mostly like half roguelikes where you still keep some progress, but not whatever. But you are basically, you're facing a dungeon master, like an NPC dungeon master, who is playing a card game with you where you build a deck of equipment cards and build a deck of encounters, and then he will play like things to combat you, like he has 12 kind of adventures that you go on with four suits, three bosses basically. So there's Dust, which are bandits, there's Bone, which is skeleton, there's Plague, which are rat men, and Scales, which are lizard men. And then he'll lay out these cards in like this your encounter deck. You'll randomize them and lay them out, and you go on a series of adventures. And it's basically like a mixture of like decision making plus like a shell game, but with the combat from the Batman Arkham games, or you probably familiar with from Mordor, Shadows of Mordor combat, where you're like facing like a gang of guys and you like counter and attack and jump around and stuff. And it's really interesting because as you go, you unlock more going through these encounters, you unlock more cards, which then you can build your encounter deck with these cards, get new encounters that let you get new stuff, new equipment that's more powerful, and there's also blessings and curses, which alter the core gameplay in interesting ways. Plus, you got to worry about, you get gold and food and health are kind of your resources you have to manage. It's very interesting. It's $25 on Steam right now. Totally worth your money. It was on sale for like 20. I put about 10 hours into it so far. It is really fun, very challenging. I'm in the last of the bosses. I'm on the King of Scales, and I have not yet faced him. I can't get to him. It's really tough because as you go, the bosses aggregate and become normal villains. So you have to run through all this, it's like a gauntlet, just like, you know, like a roguelike. And it's really interesting. Great design, really tight, and they're still updating the game like constantly. Like they're really doing a great job with that. I would definitely, anyone who likes board or card games and the idea and like combining that with roguelikes and like this, the kind of that Batman Arkham combat system, it really works in a really interesting way. And it like is, it's like a storytelling game to a certain extent. Like it's just like, every card is like, gives you a choice, and you have to go balance like what will that sometimes, and until you encounter a card, you don't know what it does. So there's like one where you can go it like, do I want to be go into a drinking contest with this bandit captain, or do I want to try and navigate this treasure chamber filled with traps? Or what choice will I make? Do I want to steal? Do I want to do I, or not? Or, you know, tons of ethical moral choices mixed with this kind of roguelike adventure, and the way that it mixes all your experiences up every single time, it makes it like you could see a card, but in a new context, it makes it completely different. It's really interesting. So I definitely suggest it. It's only $25, and there's an endless mode that you play with all the cards. So if you just want to go as long as you can, which is also fun, because each time you like, there's a kind of a balance of decisions, like, do I want to try and go through this card and unlock another new card, knowing that I might not live, and then I'd have to start all over? Or do I just want to skip it and try and just get to the boss? So there's that kind of choice, too. It's very fun. Definitely recommend it. I would say anyone just like look at the videos, look at, you know, online, watch someone play it on YouTube, and that will kind of probably seal the deal if you want to play it or not. But I don't want to spoil too much stuff because a lot of the cards, like a lot of the fun is had in like not knowing what a card does and encountering it for the first time.
It definitely looks really good. I was watching the, I can't tell how much of it's gameplay and how it's just pre-rendered, but the stills, I'm assuming from the game, look pretty good.
Yeah, it looks nice.
You're clearly excited about it, and Steam is recommending it to me with their new recommendation system. Do you ever follow curators on here? I kind of feel like I should follow some of them because I don't know. It's a good system.
It's a
lot better to have people like recommend good stuff for you than to just go off of ads.
Yeah, I haven't yet. I've thought about it, but it just seems like, you know, a thing where I got to do research and make sure I'm actually following someone who's not an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
And then by the fact, I listen to video game podcasts. I follow some video game sites online. Like, I generally like parse through that a lot of the time and then look at Steam. Mm-hmm. So, and the fact that I don't even play all the games I already have, so I need to buy more games. I'm running out of games now. I only have like 14 games I have never even looked at, and I'm like, I should buy that, and never.
You only have 14 games that you've never played in Steam.
I have about 65 that
I've never turned on.
There's tons I've never played, but of the ones I've actually got, like I purposely purchased without like being part of Humble Bundles and stuff.
Yes,
a lot of them are like, oh, I just part of his Humble Bundle. I'll take it, but I'm probably never gonna play unless I get, you know, bored and curious, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But Hand of Fate, really fun. Definitely suggest it. Check it out.
I really like your description of it, so I am interested.
So the other thing I want to talk about, and this is I think it can broach into a slightly larger discussion, is I've suggested this podcast on here before called Invisibilia, done by NPR. Mm-hmm. I think they just ended their first season, quote unquote. Their last episode was basically about wearables, about the guys who first did it in like the 90s with like 5-pound battery packs strapped to them at all times, where they had like one-handed shortcut keyboards where they would manually input information about things as they saw them, and they'd have like very simplified Google Glass kind of setup almost. Like the guy talks about being inspired by RoboCop and the RoboCop in the HUD that RoboCop uses. And they talk about his experiences with it, because he's been using it for literally 20 years. And it's the same. Basically has slowly upgraded his system, but now it has 20 years worth of data in it that's strictly personal to him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's actually working with Google.
Mm-hmm.
And all of his protege who've also have started work you started wearing these things after they started work with him and knew him at MIT and all these other like obviously advanced tech mind places, they started doing it too, and they're also working at other places trying to come up with these, you know, the wearables as they're called. And I mean the focus of the podcast, a lot of it was, is this ever going to be socially acceptable? Is this the thing that's ever going to be used widespread? Like everyone has a iPhone or a smartphone in their pocket now, for the most part. A large percentage of the population does. Because the arguments, interestingly enough, like most of the arguments against wearables as they lay out in the episode is, you know, it's socially disorienting and it bothers people. And like it alters your social aspect of your life negatively. And yet the experiences of these guys who've been using it for a long, long time, they say it's the complete opposite. They've improved their social life because they, as they get close, you know, when they're having a conversation with someone, they can kind of access all the data they have about this person every time they've encountered them, they have entered in all this information about them. And now they instantly have it in front of them. They don't have to rely on their memory. They can think, oh, well, I know how's their kid? Like, I've forgotten. Normally they would forget they had a child, but now they remember they had a child. How's your child doing? How's your kid?
Mm-hmm.
And stuff like that. My question for you, Eric, do you think that is ever going to, like, Google has recently kind of pull back on their Google Glass research because of concerns about that. Do you think we're
I think that it's really odd that we're like concerned that that it's going to change people's behavior, because iPhones have completely changed people's social behavior.
Mm-hmm.
That it's like now just perfectly normal. People just, you know, just sit and stare at their phone like when you're at dinner with them. I mean, how is this really any different? At least you can pretend to look at someone when you're wearing Google Glass, right?
Yeah.
And you're actually looking at Reddit. What specifically were you going to ask?
No, I'm just, do you think that wearables will become a thing? Like iPhones are a thing?
Absolutely, yes. I mean, this thing on my wrist, and you have one as well, technically a wearable. I mean, it is a connected device. This one connects via Bluetooth. You know, the whole Internet of Things is happening, and I think it's kind of two different concepts. Google Glass is like augmented reality, you know, like the Iron Man HUD, you know. His example was RoboCop, obviously, but this
is... Yeah, different time, yeah.
This is a guy that's been, like... And that's, like, such an engineer-like story. It makes me think of the Mozilla developer that I met, who was like out in public wearing the Toad running shoes, but at a Linux club meeting. Clearly, this guy's never run in his life, but he's like, I don't give a fuck. I like these toes on my shoes. I don't know. I don't care that I'm carrying around a 40-pound battery and I have a I have a camera taped to the side of my glasses. Who gives a shit?
Yeah,
I'm awesome.
I don't know. I think there is a something they have. You have to a boundary to larger, more social acceptance of it. Simply because I don't know when an iPhone. I think the camera aspect of it is the thing that bothers people. I think if there was no camera function, like you couldn't take pictures.
I think given time, people are going to completely forget about that. I think people's biggest concern, because it seems like no one gives half a shit about privacy anymore. Like, I mean, honestly, did you see that argument I got into with some friends of ours? Because there was a blog that these girls within our friend circle, they were posting like, oh, look at this awesome blog. And it was handsome men dressed nicely on the train reading books.
Mm-hmm.
It was just pictures, but it was like, it was fucking creep shots, you know?
Yeah.
Like, here's a guy that doesn't know I'm taking a picture of him, and I'm taking a picture of him and posting it on the internet. It's the whole idea that anyone has any kind of privacy is eroding completely. And there's going to become a day where no one gives a shit. Like, oh, well, of course that person's glasses have a camera in them. You know, of course everything has a camera in it. It's any kind of privacy. I mean, even like I'm sitting in front of my monitor and it's got a camera in it that I'm using to, you know, record to speak to you. I mean, I've got no guarantee that this camera isn't recording me 24/7.
I'm sure that'd be very exciting.
I'm sure it would. You would. Yeah. It's pretty clear what I'm doing in front of this camera. Single guy. It's obvious. I think the biggest obstacle to wearables becoming a thing is they're not cool yet.
No, they're not.
That is what made the iPhone work. It's not because it was an amazing piece of hardware. It was because it was cool. That is what made the iPhone work and what made smartphones work. It made it cool to have an internet-connected computer in your pocket. And that's why I bought this Fitbit, is because it looks cool. People compliment me on it all the time, just because it looks like a cool minimalist watch.
Yeah.
And that's what, did you see the Huawei Android smartwatch? It's really cool looking. And it's going to take something like that, the whole marriage of like design and engineering and fitting into lifestyle, for these things to start to work. Like, if they can start to make Google Glass look cool and not like, you know, this incredibly dorky thing that straps to half of your head, I mean, that's the obstacle. Like, if you can make it cool, if you can make it to where people want to have it,
mm-hmm.
then it's, and, you know, maybe that's not that so tough a nut to crack, but I don't know. As exciting as augmented reality is, that's really the hurdle. I do not think, maybe Invisibilia talked about, you know, the cameras in it and these things, but honestly, people just don't seem to give a shit about anyone else's privacy anymore.
No, they care about theirs, but they don't care about anyone else's.
No, exactly. Let's get on the bus and take pictures of people and put it on Tumblr. Let's tweet about someone that's rude to you at Burger King. I don't know. There's got to be some new social mores that need to be developed around this. And quite there yet.
I think that's the thing. Like, we're on the, there's a lot of new technology coming out, and our culture hasn't necessarily developed any kind of rules. I mean, I think the only one I can think of that's, I think, universally accepted by most people is get off your phone before you go to a cashier. But cell phones have existed for 20 years to a certain extent. So, mm-hmm. I mean, that's still a long time coming. I think my concern with not having a wearable, like a Google Glass or so, like the guy, because the engineer who I'm talking about, who he had a shortcut keyboard, like, that he operated with one hand that had all this information possible. Like, I don't think most people would do that. Like, if there was something that could automatically kind of transcribe conversations or, and we're not close to that yet, at least not commercially available for a reasonable price. I would definitely be interested in something like that. That would like a memory, what did he call it? He called it something relating his memory enhancement or memory. He had like a name for it, but basically just reserved as a way for him to remember things that normally he wouldn't. And I think that's obviously useful. Obviously form factor is important. You don't want to look like an idiot. I don't know. I don't know if it's ever going to be a thing where everyone wears one, but my
thought is it will be huge, and wearables will one day completely replace, it will be an outdated thing to carry around a cell phone. And I think that our lives are going to be further and further augmented, by technology. That is sincerely how I feel about that.
So I'm not sure.
I feel pretty confident there are too many people that are too smart all pushing towards this. And there's going to be a day where you don't need to carry around a little brick in your pocket, that you will have basically a screen in front of your face everywhere you go, you know, that you won't, you know, but your life will be augmented. It'll be like walking around inside Iron Man's computer.
Where does the processor and memory get stored?
It's hard to say. It depends on how they crack that. I mean, it could be in a pair of glasses. It could be in a pendant around your neck. It could be something on your wrist. You might need all of these things, you know, and it's they all sort of perform different functions, and, you know, they require like different systems running. I don't know. I don't know enough about it, but it seems what everyone's excited about, and, you know, these science fiction nerds wanting to bring things or want to engineer these things in real life.
Anyway, I would suggest that episode. It's very interesting.
Hearing
that guy talk about his experiences with it, it's really, because they do relate, like, when was it television first, like, you know, the advent of every new medium, new technology, everyone's like, it's not going to last. You know, no one wants that. And then it suddenly becomes omnipresent.
If you had told people in the 90s that people would be carrying around little computers in their pocket, it would have seemed insane.
Yeah,
person would be carrying around an internet device. No one would have believed you. Hell, I thought wireless internet was stupid the first time I saw it. this is dumb. Why do I want this?
Yeah, why would you want that?
To be fair, the only place that had wireless was the computer lab at school, where I could get faster internet by plugging into the Ethernet cable.
Yeah, that's
it really didn't make a lot of sense.
Okay. That's a lot of checking in. Substantial checking in there, but now we can move on to our final segment. It is time for Nerd Boy Book Club. Nerd Boy Book Club is part show where Eric and I will assign a longer collected work and discuss it in depth like you do a book club, except it's comics. Crazy.
Mm-hmm.
This week we are doing Uzumaki by Junji Ito, a horror manga loosely translated to Spiral. Where do you want to start, Eric?
I just want the little voice inside my head that's going, ah, to just go away.
So, you did text me. Well, let me see your exact words after you had read it. That was some truly disturbing shit.
That is a true and factual statement. This book is unnerving.
Yeah, it is. It's the story is kind of there's individual stories that kind of tie into a greater connected movement. It's following a teenage girl named Kiri, I'm guessing is how you say it.
And her boyfriend. Let me get back to where it says her name. Sorry.
I'm looking at the Wikipedia and it says Kirie, so Kiri.
Yeah, it does say, it says, to be honest, in Japanese, you would probably pronounce that E as another sound, so it'd be Kirie or Kire. I don't know. I'm not sure about that. It's a strange name to me, and I'm struggling to, but that would be three syllables and not two.
Oh, okay.
I'm thinking.
And then her boyfriend.
Shuichi.
There you go.
Shuichi.
Shuichi.
Like shoe and then ichi.
Shoe and then ichi.
That one I can say.
In their little town, a fictional town, where spirals are slowly taking over, I guess is the way. Like in the zeitgeist, like they're just dominating people's consciousness and like eventually deforming their bodies in the world. It starts with her boyfriend's dad, who gets obsessed and is collecting them and eventually turns himself into a spiral inside of a container, which is horrifying.
Twists his body around and breaks his bones. Mm-hmm. It's pretty grotesque.
And then when he's cremated, the ashes go in a spiral into the pond in the middle of the town, which kind of ties into the greater, eventually leading to the town, everyone in the town, like there's a, a typhoon comes and isolates the town so that the powers of the spiral keep everyone inside. Oh yeah. It's very unnerving.
Mm-hmm.
I think the long and short of it. Did you ever, I don't know, some of the criticism I see is that it's, some of the physical deformation and spiral stuff makes it comical. Did you ever feel like that, Eric?
They're just unnerving. And I think you can laugh at it because that's literally a defense mechanism. When something's really, really horrible, we laugh at it.
Right.
I don't really find it that funny. I talked about, didn't we talk about Scary Stories, the Scary Stories book, to read in the dark?
We've mentioned it,
The illustrations from that. And, I mean, it's the same thing, that it's just truly just horrifying illustrations. Like, I think there's kind of no meat to this, I don't want to say apart from the illustrations, but there's really not a whole lot of character in this story. Everyone's like really kind of flat. I'm kind of going off on a tangent, so forgive me for that. I don't know. Let's rewind. What was it you were saying?
I was just asking if
I know I'm losing my goddamn mind.
Some of the more ludicrous,
the spirals got me. Oh my god.
Some of the more ludicrous, like deforming of bodies and stuff, is that ever like that? Some people say it makes it comical. Like you can't take it like, oh, that's not scary anymore. It's just stupid.
I never really saw it as such. But I think that's kind of a horror trope.
Yeah.
Isn't it? Is like I mean, even that even relates to what I'm saying, that it's a horror trope with, like, you know, flat characters that you don't care about and just horrible shit happening to them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like, the Friday the 13th movies, people say that they just watch them because they're hilarious. Just right. Watching people get murdered in hilarious ways. I don't necessarily think that's what this is about.
No, not, I was gonna
capacity. I don't find them funny at all. There are many times I was leafing through this and, like, the shock panels come up and it is genuinely disturbing to me.
Yeah, I mean, I do agree with you that none of the characters stand out a lot. Like, you're never going, like, oh, like, I'm not going to remember the characters after, you know, if someone asked me about this in a year, I'm going to go, oh, yeah, that was really messed up, but I'm not going to go, oh, yes, that one character, I love her. But there are, I mean, I think I care enough about the characters enough just because some of the things happening to them are so horrific that just simple empathy works enough that I, like, that yes. scene where her boyfriend's mother is in the hospital and she's cut off everything with a spiral on her, like, she cut off her fingertips, her finger, like, mm-hmm. her fingerprints, because there are spirals in them. And then she finds out that there are spirals, your part of your ear is a spiral, and then you're, like, dreading for pages on end, like, uh-oh, what is gonna happen? 'Cause, like, you know it's inevitable, like, they're trying to hide mm-hmm. it from her, and you're like, oh no, you know she's gonna find it, and then what is she gonna do? Oh, she's gonna, yeah, stab herself in the face with scissors. Which is terrifying, terrible, awful.
It's pretty rough.
It's pretty rough. Which of these? Okay, which of the? I think the thing about the spirals is that often, like, the author, the writer, and the artist, he talks about how spirals are often, like, a positive thing in Japanese culture,
mm-hmm.
and he purposefully chose the spiral to try and make it a horrific, a negative, frightening motif instead of the opposite. I don't know if necessarily we have that same, we don't have any kind of, I don't have necessarily positive connotation about spirals, but we certainly do have, like, there is some sect of our culture that is a kind of reverent to the idea of, like, the golden ratio.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And which is a spiral to a certain extent. And mm-hmm. the film Pi, have you seen that, Eric?
I have.
Yeah, that is a lot about that, and kind of the same kind of ideas of letting, like, when I first started this, I wasn't sure if this was going to be one of those things where it's just human obsession with numerology is one of those things, or like a certain, like, that golden ratio or a shape. Like, obviously, when you get obsessed with something, you start seeing it everywhere. And I was unsure when I started, like, is this going to be, like, a horror story about someone just goes crazy and starts seeing meaning when there is none in these spirals?
Mm-hmm.
But then it quickly turns, no, this town is alive, and there's a spiral. Yep.
There's a hell mouth.
Hell mouth, and the spiral curse is affecting everyone.
This town is, like, it's like Night Vale.
It kind of, yeah. Just, hey, things happen.
Each of these issues is very Twilight Zone-y.
Mm-hmm. It is.
It's going to wish you into the cornfield.
I was going to ask you, do you think that this does hold up as an overall story? Like, aside, like, each, if you read each one individually, you can obviously you don't need to read them all in one piece. You could read them separately and they would still tell, hey, look, that's a horror story with a recurring character, but not necessarily, unless till you get to the very end, it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah. I don't think that I don't think the last stories work episodically, but most of the ones previous to them,
mm-hmm.
they do work in an episodic format, and that, I mean, that's the way they were published too.
Yeah,
you know, it was those manga collected books. It's just sort of the way these are done. God, it's so horrifying. I just can't even think. It's just something about, like, the very like the realism
mm-hmm.
Of the or the, I guess the light stylization of the human figures combined with the sort of horrifying nature of, like, these illustrations, just something about, like, slowly falling into this madness. It makes it more grotesque. God, this one with the babies.
Yeah, I was going to say, the one with the babies is really rough.
Oh God, yeah, it is. It is unpleasant.
Do you ever seek out horror comics or horror fiction at
all?
Rarely. Yeah.
Rarely. It's not something that I'm interested in. I mean, I enjoyed reading this and I'm glad I did, but it is bizarre. I don't particularly typically seek out things to like shock or disturb myself. It's not really what I go to art for.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an emotion that I particularly am looking to see, but it can be very effective. It reminds me of a couple of recent pieces of a local artist here named Colin Christensen. He did those sculptures at Tate's.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, and I believe I might have showed you like the pieces that he was posting around Halloween of like it's similar to this, that it's, you know, like simple, like all the girls, like very simplified faces, but like it was one of those that he's famous for, doing these pretty women, and she's like growing all these teeth like out of her eye socket. Really disturbing. I would imagine he knows this comic and really likes it, because I think the visuals, there's some influence there, it seems like.
Is that the one, if you had to pick a story, that'd be the one that stood out to you, the one with the babies?
It's possibly the one that disturbed me the most.
Mosquitoes.
Yeah. Although, the one with the people, like, growing, like, tree roots off of their body, that's disturbing.
Yeah.
God, there's just, like, I don't know. There's a lot of these that are horrifying. Probably the one with the babies is the most disturbing. The one where the teacher turns into the snail man, then that's, God, that's horrifying. Snail people.
The snail thing is, I think, one that, if, it's not, I mean, the, if it, they had just left it at, they've turned into snails and then vanished, mm-hmm. I would go, okay, that's awful, but, you know, it's gone. But then when it returns at the end in the last few chapters, mm-hmm. and then they are just, eventually people are just carrying these things around. Because after they have completely transformed, you can eat them. You're allowed mm-hmm. to. They're not people anymore, so it's fine to eat them.
You're not necessarily allowed to, because these are not necessarily good people that are doing it.
No, I know, but it just seems like that's the terrifying thing, is that they just decided that they're not people anymore. They were people, but now they're full snail people. We can climb inside their shells and devour them raw. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now every time my back itches, I'm going to think I'm growing a spiral on it.
Growing a hump that turns into a snail's mm-hmm. shell.
The buildings that were stuffed full of twisted up people, that was mm-hmm. also really disturbing.
And they toss out the dead bodies. They're like, yeah, we had to untangle from them.
Yeah, this book, it's pretty disturbing.
As a younger man, I used to seek out the most horrific horror films I could find, or anything that Tokyo Gore Police is the one that
mm-hmm.
comes to mind. Have you ever seen that, Eric?
I've not.
You probably would not enjoy it, but it has a lot of similar things in like the body horror it's a little bit more lighter, because because it's a film and the effects aren't amazing. Mm-hmm. It looks a little ridiculous, but some of it is just gruesome. What do you like the art? I think it's effective.
No, absolutely. Like, I think he's. I think he's a very talented artist. It reminds me of Video Girl Eye. Let me see I can't remember the artist's name, and I really should. Masakazu Katsura, apparently. And I would have never guessed that. I thought I knew it, and I did not. It's a similar sort of style, I think. Mm-hmm. And it might just be that it's because they came out around the same time, and modern anime slash manga style hadn't really set in so much. This is more like a Video Girl Eye or an Akira, you know, more realistic proportions and less exaggeration, and, you know, arguably more realistic storytelling sort of progressing towards these horror elements. Not that Video Girl Eye is, but certainly Akira is, you know, with all the horrible mutation Kaneda goes through.
No, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I would certainly put him on as much as you can enjoy it. Yeah, as much as you can enjoy a book that makes you want to vomit and scream.
Oh, do you think the ending succeeds?
I don't think you read this. You don't read it for story. You don't read it for character.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not sure quite what it's trying to do other than just sort of give an explanation that it's just like this society with this weird supernatural thing and it just collapses in on itself every couple of hundred years. Mm-hmm. That's what I came to.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I don't really feel any empathy for these characters. Kirie is a very flat character I've ever seen in a story. I don't know. There's really nothing. This is like you said, you're reacting more to them as roles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you're reacting like, oh, that's his mother, and you have empathy to, like, just because you just think of her as a mother and not as a character. You think of Kirie as just like, oh, that's a standard issue girl. That's I don't know. It's roles, and it's not like the character or story. It doesn't seem like it's at all about. Like,
well,
I don't know why I keep turning the pages. I just want to see what the next shock is, and it's not wanting any kind of resolution.
Well, that's
as just sort of wanting the pain to stop.
That's what I mean. Like, I think a lot of horror movies, horror stories, horror fiction, they fail when this is in this kind of way. It's since it is theoretically episodic, but in the end it does tie together all into one story, trying to hit like a reason all this is happening.
Mm-hmm.
And like give like kind of meaning behind the events, not even giving meaning to the characters necessarily, but just making it so that, hey, this is why this has happened. Either it's a malevolent being, or just the land is cursed, or things like that. And a lot of times I don't know if that necessarily is I don't know if there could be any kind of satisfactory, you know, conclusion that would say, oh, here's a reason that spirals have taken over this town. Like, do you think it's better off trying to show, like, yeah, there's this tunnel, this subterranean thing, and that it just happens every few hundred years, and it's infinite. It's just going to go on forever. But you're still not any closer to the real reason there's a I think the best horror stories are the ones that are very small and give you a very small, like, off the top of my head, like, there's a lot of them recently in like, The Ring or Americanized would be Silent Hill, where it's just a small girl has been, so much psychic pain has been delivered to her that her spirit has been given power. And that is the reason that this is happening.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not given an ultimate reason why the spiral has taken control and does so every few hundred years. Although there is that story after the ending where they're astronomers and they're like looking up and they find new galaxies. Is that supposed to imply that it's like aliens or from outer space somehow?
Honestly, I think that's the lost story, just simply because I think that it was done earlier, and he started going a different direction with it. Like, I think it kind of didn't fit with all the rest of the stories, which is why it's kind of apocryphal. That's my gut feeling on that. But,
maybe you
feel different.
No, I don't know. I don't know what to think. Like, I had seen some criticism online about the fact that they talk about it like it's a they call it expanded background. I don't know what necessarily that means, but I don't know. Like, do you think if they had tried to nail an actual reason that it started in the first place, that it would be more cohesive at the end? I think, because that's my problem with a lot of horror fiction is that it just can't give you a good reason why things are happening.
Well, I kind of think that's part of what makes things horrifying. Like, we're afraid of the unknown, and that's why, like, this guy, like, twists himself up, you know, because he sees a spiral. And that's a horrifying thought, and it's just everyone's possessed with these things, and everyone acts strange, and you don't know why. And I think to give a reason for it and to figure out a mystery, I mean, that's what propels story and plot forward, but there's hardly any of that here. That it just seems to be a tool for delivering disturbing images, which is fine. To me, it's a genre that doesn't make a lot of sense, but I think the mystery is the key thing. And I think that, you know, when you think about it, when you unpack it, when you kill the mystery, it's not scary anymore. You know, if Cthulhu was, like, you know, not ancient and mysterious and, you know, all of the things that they describe, it wouldn't be horrifying. If these spirals, if we really understood why it was doing what it was doing, it wouldn't be scary anymore. That it's the not understanding that gives us anxiety about it. I think a lot of horror movies, like, that's the majority of the plot, is figuring out why this is doing this, you know, unless it's just gore porn.
Yeah.
It's a great face you just made.
My back is hurting.
I'm sorry. You're going to twist into a spiral.
That might be what it is, or if I'm turning into a snail person.
You are. I'm telling you, like, every itch. I'm like, oh, God, I've got roots growing out of my body. My back's going to turn into a snail shell. Ah! It's so bad. This shit just gets in your head. It's so bad.
Yeah. It also does that, certainly, especially towards the end, after the catastrophe, after the typhoon, it certainly goes in the direction of, look how horrible people are. It uses that as well as the part of the, you know, like, no one wants to let people back into the houses, the only places that are safe from these windstorms that pop up, these tornadoes, twisters.
Right.
So, that's an element of it, although it's not really present for most of the book. It's only present for that end sequence. Of course, though, there's contextual reasons for it then, so I can understand why it's not introduced earlier for the most part. But it really does kind of tread in many different kind of little, the sub-niches of horror, of human foibles and, you know, jealousy and things like that. God, the kid with the spring in him. What the?
It was really strange.
It really is. They never removed the spring.
Yeah, that isn't... What? Yeah. That's a... I don't know. Pure Twilight Zone right there. It made me think of... it made me think of Bart and Homer. The air conditioning's on.
Oh God, I came back to the babies again.
It's really gross. It's really, 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 really gross.
I think anytime you have... Like, that is a very loaded... subject for horror, like a pregnancy, you know, anxiety plus like babies and like the vampire fear, and even making it more bestial, like with mosquitoes and stuff. Ugh. I think that's why that's so impactful, because it's really like something is growing inside you, literally, like, and it's something that happens every day.
I think that's what a lot of this stuff does, is it hijacks different parts of our brain. You know, it's like these combinations of things that I keep thinking about Colin's sculpture of that, like, the pretty girl with the thousands of teeth growing out of her head, because it's like that part of your brain that sees the pretty girl, and then the part of the brain that sees something horrible, and the combination kind of makes you, it makes something happen inside you, and that's what a lot of this artwork is doing. You know, he's really finding clever ways to hijack that shit and disturb you. And I think that's probably one of the most effective, things that he does. God, the babies.
He's done another unrelated story called Slug Girl.
Guy likes drawing slugs.
Yeah.
Slug Girl by Junji Ito.
I'm looking at the his bibliography. Who would you recommend this to, Eric?
People that don't like to sleep. I think people that like horror, you know, this is a solid example. I mean, it's a very Japanese story, but it's also pretty by the numbers horror. It's good. You know, I've enjoyed it, even though I think that the criticisms that I've had of it, of flat characters and all these different things, I think it kind of doesn't matter, because this book is not about presenting rich characters in a story. And I think people that are into horror, they're going to get what they want out of this, as it is truly disturbing and horrifying.
Yeah.
Slug Girl looks much the same.
I think I agree with you. Anyone who likes horror, anyone who likes body horror, Cronenberg stuff, he comes to mind immediately, because almost all of his films are about horrific body mutations and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. That's the American example I can give. Tokyo Gore Police is the only Japanese film I can think of off the top of my head, although I'm sure there's tons of them that haven't been localized.
Japanese people like disturbing shit, or at least that's what I have gleaned from their culture.
Takashi Miike. Some of his horror films, like Audition, coming off the top of my head. So, Eric, anything else you want to talk about?
Nothing. I don't think so.
Okay. We did cover a lot. It's horrible. Horrific. Babies.
Truly, truly horrifying.
Babies. Babies. Just babies. Not even the horror babies, just babies.
Mm-hmm. They are. They can be horrifying.
Monstrous.
Mm-hmm.
Junji Ito's Uzumaki, available at fine bookstores, Amazon.com, many other places.
Also some sleazy bookstores.
Sleazy bookstores? All right. Mm-hmm. Well, we know you guys. You guys probably do go to some sleazy bookstores.
I know I do. Mm-hmm.
But next week, we are doing the first volume of Starlight, recently released in trade by Mark Millar and Goran Parlov. We've previously done Nick Fury Max, which was drawn by Goran Parlov. So I've read a couple issues of it, but I'm excited to read the whole bit. We can talk about Mark Millar a bit. But I think that we can wrap it up. Mm-hmm. We are, we are the handsome. We are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour. You can find us at handsomeboyscomicshour.com. Everything's there. You can also find us on, let's see, facebook.com/handsomeboyscomicshour, on Twitter at @HBCHour, and you can email us handsomeboyscomics@gmail.com. obviously, you can find us on iTunes or wherever else podcasts are found on your device. We're there. Please rate, review, or subscribe to us, all those things. It takes a moment of your time, and it really, really helps us out, helps us get new listeners. We really appreciate it. You can find me online on Twitter at MixMeisterCereal. It's MixMeisterCereal. And hear me gripe about people in my office talking about their children. Eric, where can they find you online?
Why? That's such an excellent question. You can see my portfolio by going to freewillunlimited.com. And you can see all the other things I get up to online by going to ericzgoodnight.com, including my Tumblr and Pinterest account. And you can tweet at me. My Twitter handle is Mr. Bad Example, spelled MR Bad Example. Woo.
Woo!
I knew that was coming.
With that, we will call it a day. Have a good one.
Rock and roll.
Woo!
That's your sign off now, huh?